UK Wine Show, show number 18. G'day and welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 18. My name's Chris Scott, and this week we're going to be talking to Lance Piggott from Vintage Roots. And in the interview, we're going to be talking to Lance about organic wines, sulfur-free wines, vegan wines, and also the rise of Chile as a large organic producer. If you want to contact me, my name is Chris Scott, and you can get hold of me at chris.scott@ukwineshow.co.uk. UK Wine Show is all one word. But before we get into the interview with Lance, let's have the news with Jane Scott.
Thanks, Chris. Drinking moderate amounts of the red wine Cabernet Sauvignon may help reduce the incidence of Alzheimer's disease. In a new study by New York's Mount Sinai School of Medicine, laboratory mice were given wine from this grape variety over a 7-month period. The mice were found to have significantly reduced Alzheimer's disease type deterioration of spatial memory function compared to the control mice. Presently, there are no known cures or effective preventative strategies for Alzheimer's. However, the disease, which leads to memory loss, affects around 24 million people across the world. Meanwhile, a survey of the world's biggest wine competition has shown that screwcaps can taint wine. Tasters at this year's International Wine Challenge found that about 5% of the faulty bottles they tested were closed with screw caps. The faults were put down to excessive sulfides, which give the wine an eggy or oniony flavour. Master of Wine Sam Harrop, who co-chaired the tasting, said the 2006 faults figures would suggest that many winemakers around the world do not have the expertise to use this seal to the best effect. Mr. Harrop believes it's essential that the wine industry works harder to educate winemakers as to best practice when using screw caps. Otherwise, he says, this screw cap associated fault may become as big an issue as cork taint in years to come. And finally this week, two big Aussie brands are undergoing changes designed to broaden their appeal. Rosemount, the brand that 4 years ago was the biggest selling wine in Australia, has seen global sales drop by nearly a quarter. As a result, it's getting a makeover and cutting its range from 12 to 6 to make selection easier for consumers. Leading the revitalization is the company's popular diamond label range. It will be packaged in a unique bottle that features a diamond base to create a prism-like effect. Screw caps are also being introduced, and the wines, which will be in the shops in November, will return to an easy-drinking, fruit-driven style. Meanwhile, Lindeman's is aiming to turn from an Australian brand to a global one. A new sub-brand to be called Country of Origin will have wines not just from Australia, but from Chile and South Africa as well. A company spokesman told us that the new range will have the same approachable style as other Lindeman's wines and will be sourced from well-known vineyards. No date has been set yet for their arrival in the UK.
Thanks for that, Jane. It's almost every couple of weeks now you hear a story about wine being good for you or bad for you. I suppose the important thing with any wine study, such as that Cabernet Sauvignon study, is that we'll say things in moderation are the way to go. And I agree with that. I think if you go too excessive with wine, it can hurt the head in the morning. But a lot of the medical studies that get reported in the news are really the start of a study, and they may not necessarily be peer-reviewed. And it's the peer-reviewing process that really confirms whether a study is a good study or not. So you need to take these medical studies with a pinch of salt. Right, next up we've got the interview with Lance Piggott. Let's have a listen to what he has to say. Hi, I'm here with Lance Piggott from Vintage Roots. They're one of England's leading organic wine companies. How are you, Lance?
I'm fine today, thanks, Chris.
Well, might as well start with how you guys started out.
We started 20 years ago when three of us were on the dole taking government benefit and looking for a business to do. And we were in France with a group of friends, and we were given some addresses of organic vineyards. So the three of us went off there the following summer in a little beaten-up Citroen and toured some organic vineyards in the Loire Valley and Bordeaux and came back with a bunch of samples. Then from there, we started a wine business in November 86.
Why organic, though? Why did you go for the organic side of things rather than just normal wine?
Conventional wines. Well, we always had an affinity with organic production, whether it be for carrots or it turned out to be for wine, but we felt that if you're going to grow things to consume and put in your body, they should be grown as naturally as possible and not be adulterated by poisonous chemicals.
Fair enough. So you guys have been going, what, since 1986?
Yeah.
20 years?
Indeed, yeah.
Have you had a big knees up to celebrate yet?
Not yet. Well, I'm sure we will. I'm sure we will. Next year.
Yeah. So organics, that's been really popular in the last couple of years, hasn't it?
It has, yeah.
Who's your typical consumer now?
I don't think it's a typical organic consumer, although I'm sure supermarkets might say differently with all their drill downs into different styles of people who buy things. But we sell to the general population by mail order, but we also sell to a wide variety of trade accounts, whether they be restaurants or shops or bars or cafes or hotels. So most of our business is dealing with the trade as opposed to private customers.
But you do sell directly to...
We do sell directly to your private customers, and I don't think there's a typical organic consumer these days because organics is quite widely available. I think people who like true food or true wine or good quality would have come to organic, and it's not just the so-called hippies who are buying organic products these days.
Not anymore, no.
No.
One of the things I always think about organic is that, you know, you don't get so many mass producers. You know, like some wine companies are just industrial factories,
mm-hmm.
whereas with organic producers, they always seem to be trying to produce a higher quality product for whatever reason it is.
Yeah, I think most producers we're buying from are not growing their grapes organically to make extra money. They're doing it because they believe that they should be growing their grapes as naturally as possible without outside interference from chemicals, which they believe are a pollutant to the environment and to themselves and to the wildlife around them. So they try to be as clean as possible on their own estate.
How about the rules and regulations? You know, Europe's full of red tape. But you go to the supermarket and there seems to be two or three different types of organic labels on there. How is organic controlled in the EU?
Well, the EU has its own regulations at the kind of high level, and they recognise independent organic authorisation bodies throughout the EU countries. For instance, in England, the most common one that you see is the Soil Association, but there are others such as the Organic Food Federation, which also oversee organic production within England. But in France and Italy and Spain, again, there's a variety of different companies. Some are independent, some are charitable, and some are run by government bureaucracies. And in each country, this varies slightly. But they all come under the same EU regulations and rulings.
So you've got a main set of rules, and then each country has their own subset of organisations that twist those rules a wee bit?
Well, I would say twist them or they add to them. Yes. So if you're buying something which is all certified organic from Europe, it will come under EU regulations, which has been overseen by the EU. So it's the same with the Soil Association in England, or EcoCert in France, Suelo e Salute in Italy. And those are just three examples.
Okay, because some of your wines are biodynamic as well. How does that all fit in?
Well, biodynamic is organic plus more. Some people will actually go for full biodynamic certification, and there are various biodynamic certification bodies, of which the most famous one is Demeter. But Demeter's not really wine-focused. It's more vegetable-focused and other plants, and so it's not really in tune with winemakers. So there are wine-making groups now which regulate biodynamic vine production for growing grapes. But there are also plenty of growers out there who are using biodynamic philosophies within their growing of grapes, but they don't use biodynamic certification. They just use normal organic certification, and they just add to it.
And it's to do with the lunar cycles and all that sort of thing, isn't it?
It's to do with quite a few things, but yeah, primarily the most common thing for people to think about is that it's got its cosmic attachments, but it's more than just that. They're using special plant preparations within the vineyard, homeopathic sprays and things which they spray onto the vine at certain times of year, at certain times within a day or night, to enhance the vitality of the plant, to make it stronger and more disease resistant, but also to help its fruit set. And this is all governed again by the movement of the stars and the moon, but mainly the stars. And this changes again every year, so the biodynamic calendar is different every year.
Oh, okay.
And each biodynamic grower will get his calendar at the beginning of the year, and they will plot out all the treatments he does within that year cycle.
What about vegan wines then?
Well, vegan and vegetarian wines are of increasing interest, of course, with a larger amount of people becoming vegetarian these days. It really comes down to the fining products or the clarification products used when the wine is being produced.
So that's when you add some sort of product to it, and it just cleans it up, doesn't it? Remove some of the haze and the...
And brightens it up, yes.
Yeah.
And cleans any suspended particles in the wine. And this is done when the wine is still in a tank or still in a barrel, and they will drop a substance into the top of the barrel generally, and this will sink down through the wine, cleaning it. And then the wine is racked off the top and leaves the sediment in the bottom, which contains some of the animal products which he used.
Okay.
And these animal products can vary from gelatine to isinglass, which is fish guts, to milk, to egg whites, and quite a common fining product these days is bentonite, which is a clay. So it's obviously an inert clay, it's suitable for vegetarians and vegans.
So if you're using bentonite, then that's fine.
For vegans, yeah.
Wine doesn't normally have any animal products, except for maybe the odd insect caught in it.
Yeah, and again, these products aren't in the wine. They have passed through the wine. I think they're one that has to make their way clear to most vegetarians and vegans who are listening, if they are at all. Okay, they have been in contact with the wine, but they're not actually in the wine that you can assume.
And so you've got, you know, you can get vegan wines now?
Yeah, we can. A lot of producers do not fine or clarify their wines at all. They let them settle and rest naturally with time. But because the modern wine producing world is so needy to get the wines out quickly, and you're on the shelf, in the bottle quickly, they have to speed this application along by fining.
Yeah.
So they use these products.
A lot of Bordeaux wines, they just do rack and return.
They do indeed, yeah.
And so there's no fining.
Yeah, a lot of even organic wine producers and conventional wine producers will not fine their wines if they don't want to. They don't have to.
But no one ever labels their bottles as vegan or suitable for vegetarians.
No, they don't really. I think increasingly some of the New World producers are, and the Australians and Californians and South Africans that we deal with are making this point known on their labels, but generally the Europeans are not making this point known unless you ask for it.
A lot of my customers, we in our tastings and that, we run organic wines there, and some of them reckon that they don't get headaches from organic wine. What do you think is going on there? Do you think that's true, or maybe for a certain group of people?
I think it's true for certain people. It's very difficult to say everybody's not going to get a headache from drinking organic wine. I think people react differently to different things all the time. And sulfur can be one of those things where some people have an acute problem with. And so if they eat an apricot, which has been covered with sulfur dioxide, which is generally the case, a dried apricot, then they will get an allergic reaction. And the same can be with wine, because sulfur is used in wine, and this can cause problems with some people. But generally, organic wines have less sulfur than most conventional wines, and all other additives are generally not used in wine production, organic wine production, so there's less likelihood of having an allergy or a bad reaction.
There's a couple of things out of that. First of all, someone told me that there's probably more sulfur in a dried apricot, as you mentioned, than actually in a bottle of wine.
Yeah, that's probably true.
And the other thing that I always tell people is it's not about whether it's organic or not, it's probably more about the volume of wine that you drink as well.
Yes, I think you're always going to get a bad feeling in the morning if you drink a lot of alcohol. Alcohol gives you a bad head, whether it be organic or not. So I'm not trying to say that you drink organic wine and don't get a headache. If you drink a lot of it, you will.
But sulfur is used in the winemaking process as a preservative, isn't it? It's an antioxidant to stop the wine.
It's been used for hundreds of years, actually, so it's nothing new. It's a fairly common additive, should I say, fairly natural additive as well. I've always give the example that wine is in the middle of grape juice on the one hand and vinegar on the other hand, and it's kept as wine by sulfur dioxide.
Yeah.
And if you don't have sulfur dioxide, generally it will oxidize into vinegar.
What about these new wines, though? You were mentioning earlier, chatting about sulfur-free wines that are coming in.
Yeah, in America, they've been making a lot of sulfur-free wines for quite a long time. Not a huge volume, but there's a lot of individual vineyards making wines without the use of sulfur dioxide. We tried with a few of those wines a few years ago and had problems with them oxidizing on us. But this was 12, 15 years ago. Since then, things have changed quite considerably in winemaking techniques, and things are cleaner, and people are more tending to use as little sulfur as possible to keep the wine stable. We're working with a winery in South Africa who's had a reasonably good track record over the last few years of making wines without sulfur dioxide. Sulfur is a byproduct of fermentation anyhow, but in very low levels. So the majority of sulfur in wine comes from man's addition.
Yeah.
So these wines, we've tried them. They're very clean, fruity, and they're topped with screw cap tops, which I think if it's all done properly and correctly and cleanly, will keep the wine for a good couple of years.
I suppose screw caps have the advantage that generally they don't let any oxygen in, unlike a cork, leaks, and plastic corks, which leak even more wine between the plastic and the glass.
Yeah, I think screw cap is a good thing for sulfur-free wines, and I'm very happy with screw caps for most wine. Really. It's basically early consuming wine.
Do you think they'll have a shorter shelf life than the sulfur wines?
They probably have a shorter shelf life, but they're not designed to age. They're not designed to lay down for 4 or 5 years. They're designed to be drunk within 18 months, as most wines are these days.
And when do you think those sulfur-free wines will be hitting the markets here?
Oh, it's about September.
About September this year?
Mm-hmm.
Probably about. Okay. I don't know when we're going to put this out.
No, so they'll be here. It's on order already.
Organics as a concept has been increasing quite a lot in Europe. Mm-hmm. What have been the general trends? Who are the big organic wine consumers?
Well, I would say naturally the biggest organic wine consumers have been the Germans. They've got a greener outlook on life generally, it would appear. I think we all know that through their environmental records and what they're trying to do within Germany. And so therefore, the first home for most organic wine producers, first market to look at is usually the German market, but also the UK market being one of the most interesting markets to be working in, and the US market, which is growing very quickly for organic with organic appreciation, I suppose.
What's driving the German market? You know, is it everything's getting listed in the hypermarkets or what?
Well, I think the German market is generally the population that have a greener outlook on life. I think it's not an unfair thing to say, but also it's been easy to sell wine as an organic wine company into the bigger market in Germany because there's no licensing laws for alcohol, and also there's no tax, there's no alcohol tax. So any shop, any delicatessen on the corner of the road can stock and sell wine. Whereas if you try and do that in the UK, you've got to jump through lots of hoops and you've got to go to magistrates' courts, pay license fees, speak to sisters, police, all those kind of malarkey. So it makes it more difficult.
You get a lot of people selling organic wines just in their deli or whatever.
That's correct, and in organic food shops, whereas in the UK, organic food shops, most of them probably don't have licences because it's too big a hoop to jump through for a small proportion of their annual turnover.
Like, you guys sell to the trade as well as to the consumer. Who are your sort of big customers?
Well, our bigger customers are probably the organic chains of organic shops, say, in London, like Fresh and Wild or Planet Organic or As Nature Intended, and they're growing. And then we deal with a lot of organic specialists, vegetarian specialists, but we deal a lot with independent wine trade and off-licences and delicatessens and restaurants. So it's a very varied amount of clients, and they're all as important. Some restaurants are very important because they sell a lot of our wine. Yeah. Others are less important because they sell less. There's no one big customer.
What do you think is going to be happening over the next couple of years in terms of organic wines in the UK? Is there anything changing out there?
Well, I think they're going to become slowly but surely more widely available because there are more producers turning organic, especially from countries in the New World like Argentina and Chile, who have the natural environment to grow organically. And we've seen a rash of new vineyards becoming certified as organic in both countries. And possibly Australia, hopefully. They will see more organic ones coming out of Australia. But the French and Italians and the Spanish have been doing it for a long time, especially the French and Italians. Yeah. And for the first 10 years, all our wines that we bought were from the three main European countries. We could not buy organic wines outside Europe. But that's slowly been changing with a few vineyards coming on stream, and now more and more are coming on stream. And some of these are quite big estates. They're not just small 20-hectare estates. These are estates with 200-300 hectares of vines who are turning organic.
Chile's always had a great climate for growing grapes. People talk about it, you know, being one of the most perfect climates for grape growing. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, on the one hand, you know, it's reasonably cool because you're beside the sea often, but you're also protected by the Andes as well.
That's correct,
Do you think that climate means that you don't get a lot of disease pressure from, you know, mildews or anything like that? Is that one of the reasons why Chile could become quite a dominant provider of organic wines?
Yes, I believe it is. And I think a lot of vineyards in Chile don't have nearly the same kind of problems as the European vineyards do, because the natural barrier of the mountains does keep out diseases. It kept out phylloxera, which was the major disease which wiped out all European vineyards. And that was put down to the fact that they are kind of landlocked between the Andes and the Pacific Ocean. But also, they have very long, hot, ripening summers. In Europe, for instance, a vineyard has potentially 6 weeks to pick his grapes from the moment it becomes nearly ripe to the onset of the first frosts. Whereas you go to Chile and they've got practically 3 to 4 months to pick their grapes.
Yeah.
So they can really choose their time and they can really let grapes ripen to the fullest extent.
Nothing like watching a wine grower in Northern Europe towards
panicking.
Just before they're about to pick and watching the weather.
Yeah, the Southern Hemisphere, the producers don't seem to have that problem at all.
They do in New Zealand.
Oh yeah, well. I think they do in New Zealand. But Australia and South Africa and Chile and Argentina, they really are blessed for their weather conditions for making and growing grapes.
Yeah. I suppose, on the one hand, Chile's great for growing grapes. There's a couple of organic producers in the UK, though. They must be up against it.
They are, but with global warming, I think we might be growing Merlot over here soon. And Cabernet Sauvignon vines in the Surrey countryside. But no,
Gloucester.
Even in Gloucester.
Three Choirs are growing.
Are they really?
They're growing Cabernet Sauvignon in polytunnels.
Ah, that's interesting. I heard about that. Well, maybe without polytunnels in a few years' time. But no, there are a couple of organic vineyards down on the Sussex-Kent border. One's called Settlescombe, who's been doing it for about 20, 25 years. And there's a new kid on the block, a guy called Will Davenport, and he runs a vineyard again on the Sussex-Kent border called Davenport, or Limney Ridge, I think they're called. And he's just won a gold medal for his blended dry white. Okay. And he's using a lot of biodynamic principles down there as well. Okay. It is possible.
What about margins? You know, everybody thinks organic food's more expensive. Is it 50% more expensive? Is it 10%? What's the story with, are you going to pay a lot more for your organic wine?
I think the answer is no, I would say that, of course. But at the bottom end, we can't really supply organic wines for $3.99, but we can supply wines for $4.99. So at the bottom end, there's going to be a premium to pay. I'm not looking to buy and sell wines at $3.99. I have no interest in doing that, really. There aren't many great $3.99 wines out there, so I prefer to buy good quality wines and pay a slightly higher price for them. But when you start paying £6 to £7, I don't think there's really a premium at all for an organic wine. So really, the premium is really seen, and it's a small premium compared to food. It's really seen at the bottom end.
What sort of wines have you been drinking at the moment, Lance?
With all this summer, rosé. Must be rosé. Cold rosé, can't beat it, really. Yeah. Even a slightly chilled red. But rosé is definitely my favourite at home.
Tipple? Have you been drinking it for a while? Or
well, I've got to be just...
You've been following the trend, because everybody's drinking rosé this year.
I've been drinking it for a while, but my favourite tipple is a new Navarra rosé we've just bought in, which is deeply coloured, richly fruity rosé, and it's delicious. And it looks more like a light Beaujolais-style red wine, but it's great chilled. Okay. Can't beat it.
And do you have a wine tip for us this week?
Sulfur dioxide. Yes, drink organic and drink sulfur free. No, not many sulfur free to choose from. No, I think you should. Everybody should consider looking into their organic wines, because organic producers take a lot of care and effort in growing their grapes, tending the vines, and making their wines. And they're not doing it to make an extra buck. They're doing it because they believe in it, and they believe in making a quality product. So if you choose the right organic wine, you're going to have some of the best bottles of wine in the world.
Excellent. Oh, thanks very much, Lance.
Pleasure.
Cheers. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Lance. Organic wine is a fast-growing segment in the industry, and if you actually look on Google, it's a highly searched term. There are a lot of people who are looking for organic wines. Next week, we're going to take another view at organic wines, but we're going to look at it from the point of view of a winemaker. When I was in Australia, I went out to Robinvale Vineyards in northwest Victoria. Robinvale are an organic wine producer. They also try and make sulfur-free wines, and wines are suitable for vegans. It was good to talk to them, because some of the issues associated with sulfur wines and vegan wines and biodynamic issues all started to make a bit more sense to me. And we're going to cover a bit more of that in the next interview. Until then, though, cheers and good drinking. UK Wine Show is brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Jane Scott, recorded and edited by Chris Scott. The news is read by Jane Scott. Background news research is by Sandra Clements. The music for the UK Wine Show is Griffiths de Jingle 1 by Marcel de la Giartelli and Silence by Italy North.